You can hand an AI agent this like massive project today, and it might write flawless code or organize your entire schedule and execute a really brilliant data analysis.
Absolutely.
But then you ask it to do the exact same thing the next day, and it acts like it has absolutely no idea who you are.
Right. It's wild.
I mean, it's literally like working with a brilliant colleague who just happens to reset their brain every single night.
It is honestly the single biggest bottleneck in productivity right now. Like, we expect continuity, and instead, we are forced to rebuild context from a blank slate every single morning.
Yeah, which is exactly why we're doing this today.
Yeah.
Welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission here is to cut through all the massive hype surrounding AI agents in 2026 and figure out how they are, actually being built, tested, and deployed in real production right now.
And not just the theoretical stuff either.
Exactly. We've got a whole stack of sources to go through. There's this incredibly spirited Reddit debate from developers on framework tier lists, plus these deep dive comparison guides from Turian.ai and Pickaxe.
Which are super insightful, by the way.
Oh, totally. And we also have two groundbreaking ArcSift papers. One is on continuum memory architectures, and the other is all about cutting the massive cost of evaluating these agents. Oh, and of course, the newly released 2026 State of AI Agents Report.
Yeah, that report is it's pretty eye-opening.
So, whether you are prepping to integrate AI at work, or you're just insanely curious about why your current tools sometimes act like they have amnesia, this conversation is going to give you the exact mental models you need to understand the landscape today.
I think the through line of everything we're looking at today is maturity. We're finally moving past the experimental toy phase of AI,
Right.
and we're looking at what actually survives contact with the real world, you know, the real enterprise, real budgets.
Yeah, and before we can even look at what these agents can do, we really have to look at how we structure them. Because back in 2024, I mean, it felt like everyone was launching a new agent framework every single week.
Oh, it was pure chaos on GitHub, like truly.
Pure chaos.
Yeah.
But looking at the landscape now in 2026, the market is finally consolidated around actual workload types, not just marketing hype.
Yeah, the tools have segmented based on the actual friction developers are hitting in production.
And I was reading this massive debate from developers on Reddit about this, and the first major takeaway is, honestly, a bit surprising.
What did they say?
The consensus from the trenches is that often the best framework is, well, no framework at all.
Oh, yeah. That is a hard lesson a lot of engineering teams learn the very expensive way.
I mean, developers were basically screaming from the rooftops that if you are just building one simple agent calling one or two tools, you should skip the heavy abstractions entirely.
Right, because a framework is an abstraction,
Right.
and you only pay the computational and, you know, the maintenance cost of an abstraction when you desperately need its benefits.
Right. Otherwise, it just gets in the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, if you just need a script to scrape a website and summarize the text, raw API calls and structured JSON outputs are infinitely better.
Makes sense.
It is cheaper, you have zero latency bloat, and if something breaks, you don't have to dig through thousands of lines of someone else's framework code to debug it. You just look at the raw data coming back.
So you really only bring in the heavy machinery when the job actually demands it. I assume that means like when you need branching logic, human-in-the-loop approvals, or multiple agents talking to each other.
Yeah, that is the exact threshold right there. And when you cross that line, choosing a framework isn't about comparing a list of features anymore.
What is it about then?
Well, based on the architecture comparisons we are seeing from groups like Turian and Pickaxe, it is entirely about matching the framework's core mental model to the shape of your specific workload.
Okay.
They actually break the current market down into three distinct mental models.
Right. And the first one they outline is what they call the org chart, which maps perfectly to Crew AI, right?
Yep, Crew AI is the classic example. The mental model here is highly role-based. You literally assign an agent the role of senior researcher. Another gets the role of copywriter, and maybe a third is like quality assurance.
It is incredibly intuitive. I mean, anyone who has ever worked in a corporate office instantly understands the concept of a virtual team passing a project down the line.
Exactly, which explains why it exploded in popularity for fast prototyping. It has over 31,000 GitHub stars right now. It is very accessible.
But I feel a but coming.
But it struggles heavily in serious production environments because it relies on really coarse-grained error handling.
Meaning, what if the senior researcher agent hallucinates or drops the ball halfway through a massive web scraping task? The whole system just crashes.
Often, yes. In complex benchmarks, CreAI only manages about a 54% completion rate.
Oh, wow. That's practically a coin toss.
Yeah, because it is very difficult to recover partial work. If the process dies at step 9 of 10, you usually have to restart from step 1.
Ouch. Okay, so if the org chart model is great for demos but fragile in production, I assume the enterprise market requires something much more rigid, something that actually saves its progress.
Which brings us right to the second mental model, the flowchart. This is LangGraph.
Right.
Instead of an org chart, you are building a graph-based orchestration with distinct nodes and edges. It acts as a strict state machine, and it recently reached version 1.0 stability, which is a big deal.
Yeah, and it is seeing massive enterprise adoption, right? Like Klarna, Uber, Replit.
Massive adoption, yes.
But what does that actually look like for the developer sitting at their keyboard? Like, how does a strict state machine solve that fragility problem we just talked about?
It solves it through a mechanism called durable execution and checkpointing.
Okay, break that down for me.
Let's say you have a 12-step process. In LangGraph, every single time the state changes, like every time an agent finishes a node and moves to the next, the framework automatically takes the entire JSON payload of that exact moment and writes it to a database, like Postgres.
Oh, I see. So if the system crashes at step 7, it doesn't matter at all. The developer doesn't lose the whole run.
Exactly. The system just queries the database, retrieves the exact state from the end step 6, and just resumes.
That is huge. So that is the magic of durable execution.
It is absolutely critical when you are dealing with silent failures or API timeouts, or if you are in a regulated industry like finance.
Oh, because they need a paper trail.
Yeah, they need a deterministic step-by-step audit trail of exactly what the AI was thinking at every microsecond.
Okay, that brings us to the third model, which feels like the complete opposite of a strict flowchart. They call it the group chat.
Yeah, the group chat.
And this is AutoGen, right? Or specifically the AG2 community fork from Microsoft.
Yep, the architecture here is entirely conversation-driven. Agents literally just send messages back and forth in a shared environment.
So it's basically a Slack channel for bots.
That's a perfect way to think of it. It is the best model for scenarios where you need agents to organically debate or critique each other's code or synthesize research from multiple competing perspectives without a predetermined path.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because framing it this way clarifies so much about where developers get stuck. It is entirely about the shape of the work.
100%.
If you try to use a rigid flowchart, like LangGraph, for a highly creative brainstorming session, it is going to feel totally stifling. There is just no room for the agents to bounce ideas around organically.
Right.
But on the flip side, using a group chat, like AutoGen, to manage a strict financial approval process, that is a total recipe for disaster.
Oh, yeah. You don't want your accounting agents debating whether they should approve a wire transfer.
No.
You want a deterministic flow chart with a clear database audit trail. You have to align the cognitive architecture of the framework with the operational requirements of the task.
But here is the friction. Establishing a great organizational structure, like picking the perfect flow chart or group chat, doesn't really matter if your employees, meaning your agents, still reset their brains every morning.
Yeah, we are back to the amnesia problem.
Exactly. And that brings us to the breakthrough ArcSift paper on continuum memory architectures, or CMA.
This research addresses a fundamental flaw in how we have treated AI memory for the last few years. Up until now, the default has been ARAG retrieval augmented generation.
Right. And ARAG has always felt like giving your agent a massive library, but it's a library where no one ever updates the books. You just dump documents in, and the agent retrieves whatever is semantically similar when asked.
Yeah, and in that library, time doesn't matter. Memories never fade. They never change based on new information.
It's completely static.
Exactly. CMA fundamentally reimagines this by treating agent memory like a living biological system. CMA turns that static library into a living Wikipedia page that the agent actively edits, updates, and prunes every time it processes new information.
So it's not just passively reading anymore.
No, memories in a CMA system persist. They mutate when recalled, they consolidate into higher-level insights over time, and crucially, they decay if they aren't used.
That decay part is wild to me. An AI that actively forgets. How does the system mechanically achieve that?
It dynamically adjusts the Mector search weights.
Hmm.
Every time a memory node is accessed, its retrieval weight strengthens.
Like a muscle.
Exactly like a muscle. But if a piece of information isn't accessed over multiple temporal cycles, the system progressively lowers its vector weight until it falls below a retrieval threshold. It is effectively pruned from active recall.
so it isn't distracted by useless, outdated trivia.
Right. And the benchmark results for this are just staggering. On knowledge updates, for example, when a software API version changes and the agent needs to forget the old syntax and exclusively use the new one, the CMA system beat a strong RAG baseline 38-1.
38-1, that's not even close.
No, it's a blowout. RAG kept resurfacing the outdated syntax because it shared the exact same keywords, whereas CMA's selective retention privileged the newly updated facts and let the old ones decay.
Wow.
CMA also handles associative routing, which is basically multi-hop reasoning. It can dynamically connect a person to a project, to a technology stack, by following the strengths and weights, even if the user prompt doesn't use the exact keywords.
Wait, I need to push back on this a little bit.
Sure.
Human memory is notoriously flawed exactly because it mutates. Like every time we recall a memory, we change it slightly. If an enterprise agent's memory is actively editing its own Wikipedia page based on what it recalls, aren't we just begging for catastrophic hallucinations and memory drift?
That is a very valid concern.
I mean, a banking agent that slowly mutates its understanding of a compliance rule over 6 months sounds terrifying.
What's fascinating here is the researchers explicitly call that out as the primary limitation of the system. You have identified the exact risk.
Oh, really? So they know it's a problem?
Yes. Retrieval-induced updates can absolutely distort facts if feedback loops reinforce incorrect memories. You can't just let an enterprise system mutate in the dark. The paper emphasizes that CMA requires heavy instrumentation.
Okay, take a step back. What does that instrumentation actually look like for the human steward managing this?
It means the system automatically maintains strict provenance logs for every memory mutation. It tracks the reinforcement history of every single node, and runs background anomaly scores.
So there's an audit trail for the memory itself.
Exactly. If a human steward looks at the dashboard and sees a compliance memory drifting away from the original text, they can intervene, isolate that memory node, and rewind the system to a previous safe state.
Oh, wow.
It requires treating memory as an active maintenance operation, not a set-it-and-forget-it database.
So CMA gives us this incredible living memory, but it requires heavy human instrumentation to prevent drift. And human supervision means constant testing. How do developers afford to test these mutating brains without going bankrupt? Because I was looking at the numbers from Frank Anzonga's recent research on efficient benchmarking, and the math just doesn't work for small teams.
The costs are entirely prohibitive right now. Running the Holistic Agent Leaderboard, or HAL, costs researchers roughly $40,000.
$40,000 for one leaderboard run?
Yes. And if you want to run just one single agent through the SWE Bench Verified Coding Benchmark, it costs a median of $163 per run.
$163 just to see if your latest code tweet actually improved the agent.
Yeah.
If you're running tests dozens of times a week, that is unsustainable.
Which is why Nzomga's research is so vital. He looked at 8 different benchmarks and discovered a profound asymmetry in how we evaluate agents.
What kind of asymmetry?
When you experience a scaffold shift, meaning you change the framework wrapping the model, like moving from Crew AI to LangGraph, or when the models themselves evolve, predicting an agent's absolute objective score completely falls apart.
Because the underlying environment fundamentally changed.
Correct. But the rank order of the agents remains incredibly stable.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Even if the absolute scores fluctuate wildly due to the framework shift, the agent that was in first place almost always stays in first place, and the agent in last place stays in last.
So in plain English, that means the leaderboard you get from a cheap abbreviated test is statistically identical to the leaderboard you'd get from the $40,000 test.
Exactly.
If you only care about which agent is best, you don't need to predict their exact score. You just need their rank.
And exploiting that asymmetry allows for a massive reduction in testing costs. And Nzomga proposes an optimization-free protocol based on item response theory called the mid-range difficulty filter.
The mid-range difficulty filter.
Okay. Instead of running an agent through all 300 tasks in an expensive benchmark, you only evaluate them on tasks that have a historical pass rate between 30% and 70%.
Okay, let me try an analogy here, see if I'm grasping the underlying mechanism.
Go for it.
It's like trying to find the valedictorian of a high school. You don't need to ask the entire senior class basic addition questions because everyone has 100% pass rate. It tells you absolutely nothing about who is the smartest.
Right, that's just noise.
And you don't need to ask them unproven quantum mechanics theories either because everyone has a 0% pass rate. That also tells you nothing.
Exactly.
You only need to ask the AP calculus questions. The middle difficulty questions are the only ones that actually separate the best from the rest. The extreme ends are just expensive noise.
That is exactly how item response theory works in this context. Tasks near a 50% pass rate carry the most discriminative information about the latent ability of the model.
That makes total sense.
If you force the system to evaluate the exceptionally hard tasks, you actually degrade the reliability of your ranking because it introduces variance, lucky guesses, and noise.
And what is the actual ROI of filtering out that noise? Like, how much money are we saving?
By applying this simple 30 to 70% filter, you reduce the number of evaluation tasks by 44% to 70%. On a massive benchmark like Mind2Web, that saves up to $253 per agent per run.
Wow.
And despite throwing away more than half the test, it maintains a massive 0.94 Spearman rank correlation with the full benchmark.
Meaning the resulting ranking is 94% identical to the insanely expensive version.
Precisely.
If you are listening to this right now and you are managing an AI team, you need to audit your evaluation pipelines today. Throw out the tests your agents always pass and the ones they always fail. You will instantly cut your API testing costs in half.
It is the kind of practical engineering hack that actually moves an industry forward by democratizing access to development.
So what does this all mean? Cheap testing and living memory architectures are amazing in the lab. But are enterprises actually trusting these agents with real workflows in 2026?
The data is definitive on this. Looking at the newly released 2026 State of AI Agents report, 57% of organizations are now deploying agents for multi-stage workflows.
That is more than half. So we have moved way past simple conversational chatbots.
Way past. And while nearly 90% are using them for coding assistance, which, you know, is expected, the really fascinating stat is that the highest impact non-engineering use case is data analysis and report generation, sitting at 60%.
Data analysis is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the report actually highlights some real-world examples of this that prove the ROI, like Novo Nordisk, the pharmaceutical giant.
Yeah, that case study is incredible.
They built an internal platform called NovoScribe using Claude on Amazon Bedrock to tackle clinical study reports, or CSRs. For context, a CSR is not a quick memo. These are 300-page regulatory documents that compile the massive data sets of an entire clinical trial.
And before NovoScribe, human medical writers were averaging 2.3 of these reports a year.
That's it? Two a year.
Just over two. And in the pharmaceutical industry, delays in getting a drug to market can cost up to $15 million a day in lost revenue.
A day.
The pressure is immense. But by deploying a sophisticated agentic system, Novo Nordisk cut the drafting time of a CSR from months to literally minutes.
But wait, how does an AI system guarantee regulatory compliance on a 300-page medical document? I mean, hallucinations in a clinical trial report would be a legal nightmare.
This ties directly back to what we discussed with Landgraf's durable execution.
Oh, right.
Because the agent's workflow is built on a strict state machine, every single assertion the AI makes in the report is cryptographically linked to the exact row of clinical data it pulled from the database.
Okay, that makes sense.
It provides a deterministic audit trail that human regulators can instantly verify. It completely transforms their pipeline.
That is a perfect example of a flowchart framework replacing a highly structured human process. And the report also details Doctolib, right? The European healthcare tech company.
Yeah, they had a very different problem. Their engineers were drowning in administrative dev tasks, writing unit tests, updating documentation, dealing with legacy technical debt.
Basically all the stuff developers hate doing.
Exactly. The routine maintenance work that every software engineer dreads. It was keeping them from actually building new healthcare solutions.
Right.
So Doctolib rolled out Claude Code across their entire development team. But they didn't just give them a raw chat interface. The platform team built a centralized repository of custom commands, prompts, and subagents.
What does that workflow actually look like for the developer on the ground?
When a Doctolib developer opens a pull request, they don't have to manually ask the AI to check their work. The system automatically pulls the specific testing subagent from the centralized library.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it reviews the new code against the company's proprietary style guidelines and automatically writes the unit tests in the background.
So it's seamless.
Completely. By standardizing the agent's behavior into reusable workflows, they cut the time spent on those administrative tasks from weeks down to hours.
It is the industrialization of the agent workflow. We are finally building the automated factories, not just tinkering with individual robots.
Exactly. It is about comprehensive systems engineering now.
So to summarize this deep dive for you today, in 2026, building AI agents means you should skip the framework entirely if you don't actually need it. Just stick to raw APIs for simple tasks.
Keep it simple.
But if you do need one, you have to match the architecture to the task. Picking between the strict flowchart of LangGraph for deterministic control or the group chat of AutoGen for creative consensus.
Spot on.
We are also upgrading from the static amnesiac filing cabinets of RGAY to the living, mutating, and actively pruning continuum memory architectures.
Which is a huge leap.
And we are testing all of these complex systems on a budget by embracing item response theory, ignoring the impossible and the trivial, and only asking the 50-50 questions that actually separate the best from the rest.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is a profound evolution in how we build software.
For sure.
But this raises an important question to leave you with. Today, we talked about how human engineers choose frameworks, design memory architectures, and filter benchmarks to optimize these agents. But as these agents get exponentially better at coding and reasoning, how long until an agent realizes the flowchart we assigned it is inefficient and decides to quietly rewrite its own cognitive architecture while we aren't looking?
Wow. Now that is a thought that will keep you up at night. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us. We will catch you next time.